Blog Talk Radio.
Beginning of part 2. Thank you for supporting Prophecy Keepers Radio with your tax-deductible offerings to the Oklava Native American Church of the White Roots of Peace.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Jossagonie, Will Bluewater, a 7th grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, at Lord Kingsborough in England, the 1700s bankrupted himself, researching the stories about the healer, and then in the mid-1900s, the daughter of the co-discoverer of the Atlantic Drift Theory, L. Taylor Hansen, Lucille Taylor Hansen, wrote a book called He Walked the Americas, which is about the visit of the healer to over 100 tribes in South, Central, and North America. And but the Cree call him Weesakajack, which is interesting because Weesak is Isaac.
Spell that?
Weesakajack, probably.
Okay.
Weesakajack. And but they say that he was there with his brother James. And of course, after Jesus left, James was the head of the church. He was the first paquid or judge. And there were he had 14 successors. The last one was run out of Jerusalem in 135 A.D. And then all of the Nazarenes were run out by 333, and the Gentiles laid over and replaced quite a bit of the theology. So we really don't have a real clear picture. It wasn't really restored until the mid-1800s when the Dead Sea Scrolls started to come out. One of the reasons why you don't hear too much about the Dead Sea Scrolls is that they don't uphold the big religions.
Yes, yeah, I can imagine. You know, what we found is that, of course, our quest is always to say where is the information, the stories that would encourage people to be more loving. What we found with the Peacemakers epic, it was almost more complete than the Jesus epic.
Yeah.
Not only that, it was more successful. I mean, the peacemaker, which may have been Jesus again, or the same entity that incarnated as Jesus,
mm-hmm.
this time was successful. He actually got five nations to lay down their arms against each other.
And then and later, Handsome Lake, you know, the
Handsome Lake,
yeah,
you know,
the good news
prophecy in.
The good news religion was revealed about 1801, and the interesting thing is when he was in his coma, he was coming out of his alcoholism. The message was brought to him by three Indians. They walked above the ground. They had a bow in one hand and an elderberry bush in the other, and they said they worked for another servant who was in Creator's land. The first time that they met with him, and later on, in further visions, Handsome Lake said he met this fourth person, and he looked different. Well, you know, the Mormon lore, you know, says that when Jesus was over here after his resurrection and established an All Things Common organization over here, that when he established 12 disciples here, he asked them, he gave them the same choice that he gave the 12 in Jerusalem, if they do you want to go in death or do you want to wait till I return? And the story is that John the Revelator stayed around, but in the Western Hemisphere that they were three disciples, and they're known as the three Nephites. And in Mormon lore, the three Nephites report to the senior apostle, John the Revelator, who reports to Creator. So that's another parallel that I ran across about 10 years ago when I was thinking about. Plus the message that was delivered to the Hopi by Masao.
Yeah.
Their description of him, you know, was when you hear about how badly beaten Jesus was. You know, when Masao appeared to them, they never saw his face because he was covered with bandages. You know, his skin was about torn off, and they could see maybe one eye, and, you know, he was pretty badly beaten up. And it's just interesting.
Let me ask you a question, Blue Otter. Who would you say are, at this time on the planet, Native American, are the clearest, most loving elders alive today in Native America?
The ones down in Mexico. You might want to listen to the two interviews I did with Jaime Perez. Don Jaime has worked with some of the humblest Mixteca and Mayan elders from you know, way back in the bush in Mexico and Central America. They're I believe they're the real hope.
Who else? Give me a couple. I mean, would you like Orville Looking Horse?
Well, I wouldn't say anybody in North America really. There's some that have a clue, but the ones whose spirituality is further progressed and is less polluted, or you're going to find them outside of the United States and outside of Canada. They're,
because of the fact that Babylon hasn't hit those areas.
Yeah.
That have,
The
you might find them actually in Hopi, because like Hopi land's pretty isolated.
Well, they,
you know, like,
you know, the traditional Hopi elders have been so persecuted by the tribe. You know, the
well, it's turned around now. You know, we work with the Hopi Snake for East Radford, and Radford and his daughter Dawn went out last April. And they talked to all 11 villages, and they got, I believe, for the first time, a Native American tribe said no to casino gambling.
That's good.
And they turned their back on $27 million, which would have tripled their budget. And the gambling would not have even happened where they lived. It would have happened 2 hours away.
Holbrook, probably.
Interstate 40.
Yeah, Holbrook, probably.
Yeah, and so what happened is it's turned now. They're listening again to the traditional elders.
Well, that's
and I
good.
Asked Radford, I said, what arguments did you make to get your tribe? Because it was a tremendous pro-gambling lobbying going on. You can imagine what $27 million a year, how much lobbying within and outside the tribe would be going on. I said, what arguments did you make to, and what was funny is we came in there about 8 months before with our One Love concerts, and we met his daughter. And his daughter told us that two things about our visit when she saw what could be done by a few committed people, my wife, myself, and Abijah, she decided to take on the gambling issue. She was just a grammar school teacher. She wasn't a leader in the tribe. Her father was a snake priest. And she said, many of the people, we went to Hopi land and we gave a message to the Hopi people that you have been out in this remote area. You've stayed here for centuries because you were to work through the human drama of good and evil for all of us as a pattern. And that's why you burnt your villages when they became corrupted. You fought with Tewa, with Navajo. You know, you've struggled within your own clans. You've had to work through this tremendous drama on this piece of land so that we can all learn from you. And we're here to say thank you for keeping that covenant and for staying here and for keeping the prophecy and the warnings and the instructions viable, because we need those now. She said that many of the people that we did concerts at every one of their schools and a big public concert, and we brought that message forward through the concert.
I'm hoping that the death of Lori Paestewa got some Popes thinking about what they were doing, because Thomas Bunyakya spent the duration of World War II in jail rather than fight in the U.S. Army. So what's a Hopi doing in the United States Army doing in Iraq getting killed?
Ironically, they have all their reggae concerts at the Hopi Veterans Memorial Hall.
Yeah.
They built there. Who is Lori? What's her last name?
Lori Paestewa. You remember the group of maintenance soldiers, including the little gal in West Virginia that took a wrong turn and were ambushed and shot up, and several of them were killed in the after 9/11 in the early weeks of the invasion in Iraq. Lori Paestewa was a Hopi Indian, and she was in the Army, and she was killed in that action. So what are Hopis doing fighting? They're not, by definition, you're not Hopi anymore if you're picking up a weapon and fighting in somebody's army. Yukyuma, the old traditional...
the guy from Araibi.
Yeah, he absolutely would have had gone ballistic had he seen, what's happened with their government and, how a tribal council that was not traditional had overlaid the village moieties or sovereignties, because each village was, in a Hopi way, was sovereignty. There was really no Hopi tribe traditionally.
It was all the different villages. But then again, I think we have to remember that when this system that began thousands of years ago in Sumerian Babylon, when this system of male-dominated, commercial, power-driven, greed-driven system rolled across the planet and rolled across all these different organic, holistic, tribal cultures and absorbed them, then, to be a Hopi today, you could be a lot less Hopi than maybe a young guy in college who's listening to Bob Marley and looking for peace.
Well,
so we have to understand that this system was so powerful that everyone is in their own personal battle with Babylon.
Oh, yeah. Well, this pendulum always swings back and forth, and I was hoping that would be a wake-up call because, the way the U.S. government forced tribal governments to take on the Indian Reorganization Act was they wrote a letter to each tribe and said, you've got choice. You can go with a constitutional form of government and you can create it and write it up, or you can choose not to have you can choose to have your own form of government. But if you don't answer this letter by such and such a date, you're forced to take upon the form of government that we're going to design for you. And the Hopis were some of the ones that ignored it. This is 1924. So now the Navajo saved themselves from that fate. they have their own traditional government. It's not a constitutional form of government, and they don't have their own courts. And but the Hopi and a lot of others, you know, ended up getting sucked into that BIA government system where you can't even elect your own officials unless their elections are called secretary elections, because whoever they elect has to be approved by the Secretary of Interior.
Well, I think the tide has turned. I think for the Hopis to have said no to casino gambling.
Good.
When I asked Radford, the snake priest, what arguments did you use, he said a couple. He said we explained in every village we went to before the referendum, and we said a couple of things. Hopi says we are never to prosper on another person's weaknesses.
Good.
Hopi says that we are never to have permanent money. If we have to deal with money, we have to earn it every day to pay our bills. And Hopi has within its lore, within its legends, not even legends, within its history, two or three villages that were destroyed. Why were these ancient villages destroyed long before the white people came? Because they got into gambling.
Yep.
So they went and explained, this is why. And on those reasons alone, the mob wasn't going to move on to Hopi land. They would have been over there in what was the name of that town? What was it?
Holbrook.
Holbrook.
At the giant.
2 hours
giant,
away.
Yeah, the giant truck stop. Or the
yeah, and they would have just gotten a check every month for $2 million.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have to deal with it. And they said no. And these are Hopis with pickup trucks and bills to pay who have been, you know, incorporated into this system. And yet they went and said, I know every Hopi would get money. I know we would have better health care. We'd have better schools. We'd have sent our kids off to college easier. But on what Radford and Dawn has said, we're going to say no. Now, that is to me, that means that the decline of the Native American culture has turned from bottom and head of that.
That's good. You know, the casino system, the nightmare that happened with the Tiwas down in El Paso really showed what can happen when a group of Indians set up a casino and then they're forced by circumstance to close it. And this is after they've all built new homes and they're all driving big cars, and then all of a sudden they don't have that income anymore. And then they realize, had they used that money to start up businesses so they would be self-sufficient in a few years away from the gambling, then they'd be owners of their own. They'd be self-sufficient, but they didn't. They weren't. They weren't wise and didn't do it that way. And which is unfortunate, because it's the old quick buck routine. I kind of look at the Indians nowadays as being in the same modes as whites were maybe 75 years ago, as they came out of the Great Depression. They were just so into the fast buck that they would really do anything, and they trusted too much their own. Unfortunately, you know, they weren't smart about money. They trusted too much their own wisdom, and they let the men control. I know up in Canada there's been a lot of abuse of the money that they get from say the Cree. You know, the money that they get from their oil. They get maybe 5% of the money that comes out of the ground that they get back from the government. They get quite a bit of money, but, you know, they go on these trips, and a lot of it's just wasted. And
I think what you're seeing is it's an indication that the cycle is complete.
Yep.
In other words, the Native Americans have become like the
yep.
culture that they detested. When
yep.
when you give a when your grandparents or great grandparents were given alcohol so they would sign away their land, their Indian land, there's not a big distance between that and using people's addiction to gambling to fund your kids' college education.
Yep.
As a Native American, when you're watch this culture destroy the buffalo and the natural setting, and then you sell oil off of your property to pollute the planet. So I think what you're seeing is it just indicates that the system, this younger culture system that's rolled across this planet, is completed itself now.
Yep.
To the point that it finally hit the last tribal group, and they became just like the system. But it's now, I think it's at the point where it's made its turn, where what happened at Hopi with being the most spiritual, the most culturally intact group of Native Americans of the country, for them to say no to $24 million on sheer spiritual philosophical ground.
Let the wind blow, let the truth be known.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends, and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
To all mankind again, Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper, oh
And then something else very amazing happened that's not very well known, happened last summer. We went in to Havasupai at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. There's 700 Havasupai. You know about them, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's 700 Havasupai Indians that still live on the floor of the Grand Canyon. And we went in there with a reggae group. It took 7 helicopters to bring in the stage, the sound, the equipment. We went in there with the Hopi Snake Priest who defeated the gambling. Leonard Pelcher's people, Raquel Burnett from Leonard Pelcher's Defense Fund, came and spoke. And Julia and I spoke. We brought one message to them, that you are down here remote and do not leave. You know, most Havasupai, they don't go out of the canyon until they're in high school, because there's no high school down there. And then they go and they have to be in foster homes in Phoenix or Flagstaff. They've never dealt with Walmart, traffic, computers, driver's license, police, racial prejudice. And after less than a year, they all come back to the canyon, never to leave again.
Yeah.
They speak their own language, except when they're talking to tourists. And they ride horses. They didn't have money in the tribe till 1970. We talked to people our age who said, "I remember when there was no store, no money. We bartered everything. There was no TV, no phones, nothing. We just living," and that was in 1970-something.
I think they finally got internet connection a few years ago.
Yeah, and so what happened is we went down there and said, "Look, you are in the most beautiful place in the U.S. It's also the most remote. And your name, Havasubaja, means keepers of the heart of Mother Earth. You made a covenant with the Creator to guard the heart of Mother Earth. And now, and that's who you are. And now special interests and the BIA and the government want to come and have you sign treaties, leases on uranium and gold and water and everything here. What we're here to tell you is if they don't know that you made a covenant, they don't know who you are. They don't even know what your name means. They don't know that you're the guardians of the heart of Mother Earth. So if anyone wants your vote, whether it's a BIA member, tribal council member, special interest group, and they don't know who you are, then they're like younger brothers or sisters who don't see you spiritually, and you should never take advice from a younger brother or sister. After that concert, they threw out their very pro-assimilation, pro-government tribal council.
Oh, yeah, they've gotten rid of the BIA, I understand.
Yeah, and they brought in Rex DeLucy, the number one elder, and an all-pro-traditional group. So now what you're seeing is that these two ancient tribes have turned the corner on this dissent that's gone on for hundreds of years.
Thank God. You know, it's getting bad when the Canadian women Indians are turning their chiefs in for corruption. You know, this happened 2-3 years ago.
Oh, the clan mothers started turning the
chiefs? Yep. Yeah, they broke tradition. Hundreds of years of tradition turning their own political leaders into the Canadian federal government for corruption.
Uh-huh. Was that around gambling?
No, just around...
just around money.
Yeah, because I don't think they've got gambling. They get... Indians up there are richer than we are, and they get about 5% of what the Canadian government pulls out by way of resources. You know, oil, timber, and so forth. Just corruption.
Yeah, and we're gonna start working, going down to the Cherokee tribe. You know, we live near the Cherokee Eastern Band here.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, I just talked to someone in the Cherokee Studies Program at Western Carolina this morning. And when we started going down to Cherokee 10 years ago, it was all young Cherokees working at the hotels and the restaurants and everything. Well, now if you go to Cherokee, there's not one young Cherokee working anywhere. They're Eastern Europe. They're
yep.
Jamaicans. They're from Philippines, because the gambling money given to the tribe gives every Cherokee $60,000 when they graduate high school. If they don't graduate, they get it when they're 21. So there's no incentive for them to work anymore. I'm going to go down there, and Julie and I want to talk to a lot of people and say, look, 10 years ago or so, gambling came in here. A lot of money poured into the tribe and to its people. Has that been a good thing or a bad thing? I want to find out. In other words, we would assume that if you take dirt poor, Native Americans living on reservations, and they got old cars in the front yards for parts, and they got a wiki up or a trailer, what have you, that to see gambling money pour in, and now they got a brand new double wide, now they got a brand new truck, that, of course, that's better for them. I don't know if that's true. If they earned it on the sweat of their brow, maybe, but if they was flooded in there and given to them, was it really? So one thing that we want to do in this book is really examine why has Native Americans, the most noble of the people on this planet, been involved in one of the most worst vices on the planet?
Yeah.
What has gone on karmically, what is going on spiritually, that Native Americans now are often referred to as casino Americans?
Yeah.
Why have they been degraded to that point? And has it even, and of course most people would say, well, it's great for them. It's their payback time. It's time for them to get paid back for what happened to them and at the price of the white man's vices.
Yeah, but they can't get it back through money. And I hope they're learning that.
That's what I don't know. I'm curious to find out.
And by the way, I can put you in touch with the Snowbirds through the Snowbird Cherokees or they live over in Graham County. They're part of the Eastern Band, but they live further over. Put you in touch with Isla Hatter and Jerry Coleman. They work pretty closely with them and the elders over there. And there's a couple more elders that I may be able to get you in touch with too. See, the traditionals don't have a whole lot to do with the ones that are living over on over in Cherokee. So we'll put you in touch with some folks that might be able to help you along your way too.
Okay, good. Yeah, I could really use anything like that. We are going to go in October to the Valley of the Vapors. You know, Lee Standing Bear is having a gathering there in October. Are you going to that by any chance?
We interviewed him last year. I don't have the money to travel.
I know, you know,
my cars, you know, we don't get dare go too far away, and we'd love to, so I haven't had a chance to meet Grandfather Standing Bear. He did a wonderful interview last year. We've got to get him back on.
Yeah, we were listening to that the other day here on your website.
I travel all over the world, you know, and then there just came a point when I decided that I wanted to get out of cities and get out of the rat race. You know, I kind of had to embrace poverty, you know, so I was raised upper middle class and you know, right out of college. You know, at the beginning of the interview, you talked about, you know, you do the first 20 years and then the second 20 years and so forth. I never really did my first 20 years of self-service. I went right into scouting out of college, did the Up With People thing right into as a scout executive out of college, you know, volunteered along the way with, you know, defense forces and in emergency security and stuff in Oregon, and worked at Father Flanagan's Boys Home. So I never really did the money thing.
So you never did the third of your life to earn.
Ooh, no, never did that.
Well, it's a good one to jump past. You know, if you got to jump past one of them. I was like you. I became a hippie and lived out in the communes. And
right. Well, I was rebelling against the whole hippie thing. When the hippie thing was going on, the way I rebelled against that whole thing, I decided I was gonna wear French cuffs and carry 69. I was in high school at Northport High School when Ghost Wolf was a hippie a few miles away, living with Jack Kerouac. You know, I was wearing French cuffs and carrying a briefcase. You know.
Oh, you missed a lot of fun, but that's okay. There's still good times available.
Oh, yeah, so now I'm doing the hippie thing, you know. So
yeah.
My dad was an aerospace scientist, so. But I was just all.
I want to send you a copy of my Memoirs of an Ex-Hippie. Is your address on the site?
That'd be great.
Is your address on the site?
It is.
I'm going to send you a copy of every one of the books, The Rasta Heart, The Gathering of the Healers.
Oh, that'd be great. Just
I'm going to send you A Spirit of Marriage, and I'm going to send you the 4-hour DVD.
Oh,
of all
great.
The concerts we've been doing, and the Native and the Hopi Land concerts.
Well, you know what I can do is I can engineer the DVD if you let me to. I'm able to process video. I can take some clips off that DVD so people can watch them, and then we can help market them for you.
Yeah, go ahead. That'd be fine. We give them away free with the book, but that's fine. What we do is if you order the book.
Oh,
give you a free 4-hour DVD.
Well, we'll use it to help sell your book then.
Yeah, and that's fine. And all our books are like half price, $7.50.
Oh yeah, it's really cheap.
So it's that would be great. I'll send you all that stuff. And I also probably will be talking to you often because as we develop this Native American thing, I can see you're going to be a great resource of information and people to contact.
Yeah, well, it depends on, you know. Anybody that does this work gets, you know, we live in a glass house, so, you know, Grandfather Rolling Thunder and Sun Bear, you know, Ghost Wolf, they all get slandered, so depends on who you talk to, whether I'm the Prince of Darkness or the Helper or the Prince of Peace. So.
Now, what, we see that everywhere,
well, you know,
and what we do is, our only interest is, where is there information to make people be more loving?
Right. Well, you know,
even someone said to me, "Well, what if the Hopi prophecy, and there's a book written about how the Hopi prophecy is not true? They made it up as a time
I've got
created it.
I've got
what
it.
If the Hopi prophecy is not true? What if the Ganawitl epic is not true? It doesn't matter if it helps people be more loving to read that information to know that maybe there was a myth about a guy named the Peacemaker who didn't exist. That's fine too.
Well, I'll tell you that
because whoever would have created that.
That
would have had to be in a really high state to create a legend about a guy so clear.
That's right. Well, that book you're referring to is called The Invention of Prophecy,
And yeah, I've read that book.
It was written by, I believe it's a Danish professor. I'll tell you, there's more information. If you want to know what was published and when and by whom, and who was doing what and when, that's the book to have. You have more information on, you know, who the traditionals were and the different factions at Hopi. And another person you need to put you in touch with that's in with at Oribe, who's the daughter of Chief Mike, who was their last traditional chief. They don't have a man in the correct clan to be their Kikmongwe anymore, so they don't have a Kikmongwe anymore. But
yeah, we met with Chief Stanley when we were there. But you know, like that book, the let's just say that these elderly elders made up the stories of the prophecy, the warnings, and the instructions. Let's just say they made all that up and it didn't really happen. Well, that's okay too, because if a group of elderly Hopis could sit down with each other and say, let's make up this so we can help the world, that's a high level to come from. And
that's right.
But to me, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, I hear controversy about Lee Standing Bear. I have controversy about, you know, Hopi and different Havasupai people and stuff. And we go in and we say, it doesn't matter. Are we being led to information and to people who can help us through our writing, through our DVDs, through our newsletter,
our website,
it can help us to encourage people to become more loving.
Well, if they bring
that information forward to us, we don't qualify it as to whether it can be proven 100% to be true or not.
That's right. Well, until Grandfather Wallace's wife died, he really wasn't able to teach because she disliked white people so much. But once she passed away, you know, the door was open. But he's another guy who's, everybody gets slandered. It's just absolutely amazing.
Now, this is Julia here.
Hi, Julia.
I wanted to talk about that, how it is the storyteller that it is the one that ends up, who is the most perhaps aggressive or the loudest or wants the power through the storytelling, that then gets heard, but doesn't necessarily mean it's the whole story. You know, if you heard the woman talking about Lewis and Clark expedition, it would be a whole different point of view. You'd hear her gratitude for Mother Earth and her herbs healed probably everyone there, and probably lots would have perished had she not been there with her healing herbs. So it's all in who's telling the story, like you were saying just a bit ago. And I think that I have seen in the subtleties of women, especially this day, as I speak to you, I've met many women like Rainbow Weaver of the Mohawk tribe, who is a Haudenosaunee, you know, and she speaks from her heart. She'll go to these schools to delinquent youth, and she'll speak about the dream catcher. It'll be an hour session. She'll do them 4 hours, and at the end of the session, everyone is left silent after seeing every one of those boys stating what they wanted, because they had learned through their dreams. You know, and it's that kind of stories that, and I think more stories are, we're ready for women to tell more stories. The clan mothers, the social ones, that stop listening to the war stories and start listening to the love stories within themselves that they learn from their grandmother and the grandmother, and as we do that, the balance is returned, and the pairs feel that balance, and we feel that heart opening that's so natural. But if we're not teaching that to each other and we're having all kinds of thoughts other than that thought, then the pure thought escapes us and we go into fear and illusion and things that are taught as we grow up generation upon generation. And until someone says the emperor doesn't have any clothes on, I want to have love every minute of my life. Why wouldn't I? I'm saying, I'm choosing. And it really is that. Each time I choose it, I get it. I get what I ask for. And it's such a simple thing, and yet if not listened to, few people give a listening ear for that. But that's changing now, and the women are speaking at the libraries and amongst each other and claiming themselves as messengers of the message of peace.
Ho.
Ho.
What more can you say than ho?
Ho.
When you were up at Haudenosaunee, did you get a chance to meet their new Tadaho, their new Supreme Sachem?
You mean Sid Hill?
Yeah.
No, they had all gone to Washington that week to some kind of gathering.
Mm.
And so we were unable to meet with them, you know. And so we did our concerts within mostly the African-American community there, into the schools and the community centers. And then we went into the prison, and then we did the Onondaga Lake Peace Festival on the weekend with Abby Jah. He joined us from Jamaica and performed there, and we spoke there. So we were working with that. So I think we have another visit yet to do up there.
Good. Good. There's another contact you might make is with John Fadden, maybe even his father, Ray. John has the Six Nations Museum at Oneonta. And his father, Ray, and I understand Ray, maybe Jake Swamp, pretty much single-handedly brought their entire culture back, maybe with the help of Mad Bear. But they really reassembled the culture in the late 50s and early 60s. Ray's, if he's still alive, he's a very old man.
Look inside the rainbow. Look inside the heart. Deep in the mountain stillness, echoes of another time. Let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place, so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy Keepers. Prophecy Keepers.
Prophecy Keepers.
Oh,
what what's the last name?
Fadden, F-A-D-D-E-N.
Okay.
And they were the ones that they had the they published that book, Traditional Teachings, by the North American Indian Traveling College, I believe it is. I'll send you a link and a phone number for John Fadden, and because he has a museum up in New York, pretty well plugged in with the traditionals up in that part of the country.
Well, you know, the Peacemaker was really good with that too. When we were in that area, there were some major conflicts going on by different people trying to establish peace, supposedly, in the area. But they were warring among themselves.
Yep.
And what we try to remind people is the Peacemaker said that if a leader has gone astray, like Tad Adejo went astray, he didn't say punish the leader. He didn't even say point out where the leader was making mistakes. He said comb the kinks out of them with love. And so to us, we feel like it doesn't matter if we go to visit somewhere and somebody there says, oh, this person is not coming from clarity, or this person is under an evil vibration or whatever, because it doesn't matter, because if that's the case, the instructions are still quite clear. Go to that person with love and reason with them about love and comb the kinks out of them, which I cannot say that I was successfully able to do on my trip in Syracuse all the time. Sometimes I would forget I was given that instructions and find myself very judgmental at some people. You know what I mean? So I had a comb. Julia and I kind of combed some kinks out of each other, too.
Yeah.
But so to me, when you know, I hear, like, as happens all the time in this work with healers, when you go to see one healer, I go, oh, don't listen to that person, he's this way, or don't listen to that person, he's this way. We think, well, that doesn't matter, because even if that's true, and I don't know it's true having never met the person, even if it is true, the search for one love remains the same with them as it would if the person was already there. You know, because either they're a latent healer or they're an active healer. And in either case, it's viable to go and be with them.
Ted Silverhand's another good elder.
What's the name?
Ted Silverhand.
Ted Silverhand.
We interviewed him early last year, and he can put you in touch with... he knew one elder that's now in his 80s who's still teaching, who I wasn't able to get on the show, but that was on the original White Roots of Peace Council in the late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah, if there's anybody else of that long list of people that's on your site that you think we really ought to listen to their interview and maybe contact, would you just email it to me?
Oh, you bet. Yeah.
How did you find out about us, Blue Otter?
You sent me an email.
Oh, I guess I just found you on the net and sent you an email.
Yeah, people that are close to you, Yellow Horse Man, it's in Raymond County, Georgia, not too far away.
Wait, let me write that. Yellow Horse Man?
Yellow Horse Man.
Uh-huh.
And Tom Blue Wolf.
Wait a second. He's Yellow Horse Man.
Uh-huh. Yellow Horseman.
Tom Blue Wolf.
Mm-hmm, Tom Blue Wolf.
Are they both on your site?
Uh-huh. They've got interviews. Just click on Free Archives. At the top of the opening page, just click on, there's a line of, green line of links. Just click on the Free Archives. It'll take you down to the bottom left of the page where all the 75 shows are archived.
Yeah, I've accessed it before. I just didn't know who to go to.
Jaime Perez.
All right, Jaime Perez.
Very important. And, of course, Robert Ghostwolf and Red Elk.
I don't know these people. Robert Ghostwolf?
Mm-hmm. I'll have Robert get a hold of you. You guys are birds of a feather.
But, and who's the other person?
Red Elk.
Red Elk. Mm-hmm. Red Elk?
Mm-hmm. R-E-D-E-L-K.
Okay.
And, you'll see. I've done 7 shows with Red Elk and about 7 or 8 with Ghostwolf.
Oh, well, this weekend we'll start listening to that. We've got some time available, Julie, and I'll sit and listen to your...
Oh, well, what we need to do is I just need to send you... I'll reciprocate and send you all of our stuff. I'll send you a set of... so you don't have to be bound to the Internet and have You may not have a cable connection. If I send you all the shows on CD, it'd be easier to listen to.
Well, that'd be great. We can also, if, you know, I can maybe bring some of that to some of the Hopi snake priests or have a Supai keeper of the secret. So we'll listen to that as we drive around Arizona.
Sure.
On our trip. We fly to Arizona the Thursday before Labor Day, and we meet in Phoenix with three healers from Jamaica.
Oh, great.
One is Oprah of Jamaica.
Oh, and while you're in Phoenix,
uh-huh.
Need to get you in touch with Don Medicine Wolf. He lives somewhere near there. He is a Mohawk elder, and he's over 140 years old.
Wow.
His name is Don Medicine Wolf?
Don Medicine Wolf.
Oh.
I've got a telephone number for Robert Ghost Wolf. And, I mean, this guy was born like at the beginning of a Civil War. And
wow.
Still lucid, still teaching.
We're going to be in that area doing the Hopi and the Havasupai concerts Labor Day.
Oh.
And we're going to so can anybody else you can think of we need to contact?
And if I can, I'll be emailing you.
Okay.
And maybe we can shake Ghost Wolf out of the hidey hole up there in near Santa Fe.
Okay. What we do is, and ironically, we're traveling with a woman who called us and said she loves what we're doing. She films for reality shows. She'd love to take this journey with us and just film everything.
Right.
And we're going to ask different elders a simple question. Is there a message you would like to give to the children of the world? And if you want to, we can record it and provide that free on the Internet.
That'd be great.
To colleges and to libraries and non-commercial. And if you'd like to speak to us or to the camera and bring a message, we're here to do that. And if you don't want to do that, we more than understand. So we're going to invite
sure.
you to bring their message out if they feel drawn to.
Absolutely.
So I would like to go to someone like Don Medicine Wolf and
yep.
say, here's what we're doing. If you'd like to, we've got someone here that can film you saying it and whatever you'd like to say to the children.
So you're going to do a video version of what Harvey Arden did in Wisdom Keepers and Travels in a Stone Canoe.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
we interviewed Harvey too.
Yeah, and then we, you know, somehow we'll figure out how to have it available free on the internet. We earn, by the way, reason we're able to do this is Julia and I, for 20 years, have had a small video DVD company that sells home improvement DVDs, plumbing, electrical, ceramic tile. So we know how to sell educational DVDs and videos into the schools and libraries. That's what we've been doing for almost 20 years now. So we want to develop this series and offer it to the schools and libraries at almost a free price.
Well, we've got anything you want hosted on the internet. I've got lots of space. I've got the hardware, the software to do it all, get it recorded, get it digitalized, get it uploaded so it's playable.
You're great. So your site is wonderful. Our site, about once a year, we have a friend come over and do things because we don't know how to even touch our site.
It's the knowledge comes painfully, I'll tell you. So I had to learn.
And we're not real, you know, we're very computer resistant. We kept to feed our sheets into the printer one at a time because neither of us want to mess with going to Walmart and spending $30 to get a printer because you got to figure out how to hook the thing up.
That's right.
Well, we just said, ah, what the hell, it's still working.
Well, you know, 10 years ago I knew how to hook up a VCR, but I can't even do that anymore. Not since my son, 19-year-old son, left and went to Washington, went to Seattle. He's a apprentice carpenter up there. I don't know how to do that stuff anymore because I don't have a kid in the house.
Who does such a good job on your site? Your site's very interesting.
That's all mine. I've done it all. But my son taught me a lot of, he helped me figure out a lot of it.
Impressed. That's a very dynamic site.
Well, he was a gamer, and those guys, they know how to figure out any kind of software. He was just a good teacher for me.
Uh-huh.
When he was born, we gave him the name Joseph because I wanted him, I want him to be the kind of person that Pharaoh looked to when he looked to Zephaniah-Paneah, Joseph in Egypt. I want him to be a good administrator and to be a real blessing to people. And he's that kind of kid.
He has been, hasn't he?
That kind of kid. Good. He's a good guy. And he's you know, right out of Jumpstart, he's already making twice the amount of money I ever made in my life. He's making $35,000 a year now. Been an apprentice for 8 or 9 months, and he's going to do well. Of course, numerologically, he was born under the number that, you know, where you're successful doing money, you know, so.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think we have a 18-year-old daughter, and when we did our big concert on Bob Marley's 60th birthday, and when we opened that concert with 20-some-odd thousand people in the streets, and almost every Jamaican watching on TV and radio, the Prime Minister was supposed to open the show. This was like one of the biggest milestone concerts in the country's history. Bob Marley's 60th. We had gotten 19 conscious artists to appear with us.
Wow.
And the Prime Minister was at a press conference with me and Bob Marley's daughter when I mentioned to the press that I had invited 19 teachers of love to perform that night, to ask all Jamaicans to claim themselves as teachers. And I know that the Prime Minister heard that and realized that I had invited him, but since he's the head of state, the government, you know, of course, who was paying the bill for us, had invited him. Well, the night before the event, when they had the army set up, what street he would come down and how they would get him into the facility and everything, he canceled. And I think he was very uncomfortable being on stage with other healers. And our daughter was the next speaker in the program. So our 18-year-old daughter stood in front of 20-some-odd thousand Jamaicans and all the TV cameras, and she introduced Bob Marley's 60th birthday concert in Jamaica.
Wow.
So I think that there are these really, some of our children, like, it sounds like, I'd love for my daughter one day to meet your son. It sounds like there's some people coming through.
Oh, yeah.
Those of us that have for years tried to bring this message forward, like yourself, like us, and that our children are reaching a level of maturity that we've struggled 50-some-odd years to get to.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll tell you unequivocally that my son, in many, many, many ways, is much more mature than I am. He's a natural peacemaker, and I'm really not.
You like to stir it up at times, huh?
Yeah. It's got to be a trouble. I call him like I see him.
Yeah, maybe one day my daughter can meet your son. Maybe they get married, we'll be in-laws.
Hey, who knows? He's up in Seattle. She likes rock music, you know. Yeah, he's a good kid. Well, that's great. Well, when you guys get to...
It's a wonderful interview, and not only that, just a wonderful conversation.
Well, when you get...
One thing I wanted to say, Blue Otter, is you'd like this story that happened a couple of weeks ago in Syracuse on Onondaga Lake. We, at the end of the festival, after we'd given prayers to purify the water that's so polluted there, we were all had our hearts open and everything, Abijah, our reggae singer that always goes to so many of our festivals with us, who's really a high-minded person, he realized there was tension in some crooks that needed to be discussed. So
crooks in their body.
Crooks in their
like
body,
that.
Yeah. I mean, just situations that were hard on people's heart, and we just wanted to heal it before we left. So we chose this tree that is overhanging, and I think it's that tree that where everyone had to use their hands, 20 people to dig around this tree, and the tree still stayed there. Well, we were sitting at that tree like that on Onondaga Lake and praying for peace, and one of the things that I had just done a kind of a workshop for remembering to do the impossible, that stone canoe and rowing and someone would read the book and there would be 10 of us imagining ourselves rowing and really able to do the impossible in our minds and our hearts, you know, and we were really set. So then I went out and had that talk, and it, one of the things I felt so strongly, I mean, I was instructed in the Shenandoah Valley there, or that area, was just to say respect is due the clan mothers, you know. And it just felt like it resounded off the lake. And as I'm doing that, these young university women, powerful six women, and then a seventh caller to direct them how to guide that canoe over the lake so briskly, you know. And I'm having this discussion with one of these people saying, respect is due the clan mothers. I don't care. This doesn't have anything to do with personalities, who did what. We're talking about a tradition of peacemakers, the people of the Haudenosaunee Nation that still hold peace. They're still reaching, some of them, but it's still in their hearts.
And oh, yeah.
They are of the good mind, the clan mothers. That's their goal, you know. So
yeah, they owe a lot to people like Leon Shenandoah and Jake Swamp and Mad Bear Anderson. I mean, those guys, if it wasn't for the Haudenosaunee and the Hopi, they were the prime movers in this whole thing back in the 60s.
Uh-huh. They really were, and it still seems to be the case quietly.
Yep.
Yes, yeah.
Yep.
But I'm sure there's Navajos would disagree.
Oh, there's... It just depends on who you talk to. It's just... I don't know.
How clear a guy is Sid Hill?
Sid Hill? I've never heard of him.
Well, Sid Hill was Leon. He's the new Tadadejo.
Sid, okay. I heard him when I was told his name was Hill, but I believe I heard a different first name. I knew the new Tadaho's name was Hill. I just forgot his first name. So he's not. When I interviewed somebody last year that knew, I asked them if they had condoled a new Tadaho, and they took 5 or 6 years to do it, and they told me his name, but they said he hasn't done much publicly. I don't know. I remember who it was I asked. It was, I believe her name is Barbara Smith. She's a Mohawk teacher. She might even be the beloved woman of the Six Nations. She was a close friend of John Red Hat. Called her on the phone, tried to get her to do an interview, but she's never taught, done any kind of teaching over the media. Everything she does is face-to-face. So, and she's a close friend of Yellow Horseman, but unfortunately I wasn't able to get her on the show.
If we can know your wisdom, teach us what you can. There's a mighty dark cloud hanging overhead, oh yeah, hanging overhead.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends, and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Let the truth be known for all mankind again. Let the wind blow. Let the truth be known.
Are you familiar with the paintings of Marcin Kuenzer?
No.
Uh-huh. She's done a series of very inspired paintings that show the Peacemaker's epic.
Really?
We might use her picture of Leon Shenandoah on the cover of our book. If you want to see it, because this is really inspired work, and it shows she's done like 20 paintings that, you know, him in the white canoe.
Right.
Him with Jaconsa say. Him consoling Hiawatha. It's under marcinkuenzer.com, M-A-R-C-I-N-E.
Well, I've seen the book cover. It's on your site, right?
Yes.
Those are her paintings.
Yeah, I thought that's who that looked like.
Yeah.
Oh, and another elder that we interviewed was Chokosh Aho, and she is a Chumash elder. She was the person that the elders at Oribe delivered the Hopi 10 to, and this has been about 20 years ago. You know, the know your garden, you know where do you live, you know.
How do you spell her name?
It's C-H-O-Q-O-S-H, and we interviewed her the middle of last year.
She Hopi?
She is Chumash.
Chumash.
And she was like me. She wasn't raised traditionally, but went back into the traditions later on. And she's in the Bay Area, and I haven't heard from her for some time. We're going to do another follow-up interview. Just heard from her. Her computer's been down for months, and she wanted me to give her a call, so we'll probably be interviewing her within the next few weeks. We should hear a new interview. But she was the elder that the Hopi called back after she had lived with them back in the 60s, I believe, or early 70s. They called her back about 10 years ago and asked her to take the message that's now come to be known as the Hopi 10.
Which are those 10 principles?
Right, right.
Uh-huh, interesting. I'd like to meet her. If you think of anybody else over, we don't leave for about 2 more weeks. If you think of anybody else in the Phoenix, Flagstaff, Hopi Land, Havasupai Elder, Sedona area that we should meet with, let us know.
Should be able to. I'll get you in touch with Dottie Daigle. Dottie's a close friend of Chief Mike's daughter. Chief Mike was Kikmongwe and Oribe, and his father was John Lanza. Mother was, and of course his mother was chief there for a while after John Lanza died. And these are very key people. The whole Hopi prophecy really revolves around Oribe. And so I'll get you in touch with Dottie. Dottie's near Albuquerque on the Laguna Reservation. She's authored 2 books. She lived, had a platonic relationship with a Cherokee elder named John Red Hat for 10 years. John passed away about a year and a half ago, December 30th.
Now, are there any elders you could recommend in the Eastern Band here in the Near Us in Cherokee?
Yeah, but I don't want to give the names publicly, but I'll get you in touch with them through Robert Ghostwolf.
Yeah, because some, you know, Freeman Oley, Freeman Owl, I think it is, maybe.
Haven't
no,
heard
I guess
him.
You don't know that
I've got, one in mind. It's just that we're keeping his name under wraps right now.
Yeah.
Now, and the Snowbirds, you can get in touch with them through Isla Hatter. Isla Hatter, I interviewed her last winter, I believe, and she's at ILAHATTER.com. She's a naturalist herbalist, and her husband, Jerry Coleman, they live in Graham County, North Carolina, in western North Carolina with the Snowbirds. Snowbirds.
Yeah, because we live in western North Carolina.
Whereabouts?
Uh-huh. Blowing Rock.
Okay, well, they're in Graham County where the Snowbirds are. I believe it's in Graham County. And they're in tight with them. So we'll get you in touch with Isla and Jerry. I believe they both work at Great Smoky Mountain National Park. Isla helped write she was on the team that wrote the Foxfire books. And,
I think that we'll probably do more than one book on Native American. I think what we're going to do with this book is it's the Iroquois, and you've seen the chapters because you're on my email list. But, of course, they're much, much bigger than what you've seen. They're three times that size by the time they hit the book. But we're going to do the Iroquois, the Havasupai, the Hopi, the Valley of the Vapor. And what's ironic is we just, as an epilogue to each chapter, we just went to Iroquois. We're getting ready to go to Hopi and Havasupai. We're going to the Valley of the Vapor to see the Lee Standing Bear gathering in October. And then we're going to put the book to bed and help to have it out in November, December time frame.
If you can get Grandfather Standing Bear to get you in touch with Leon Sacatero, Leon lives at Tahajili, which is about 22 miles west of, he's on a Navajo reservation that's just east of the Laguna. The Lagunas are pueblos, but there's a small band of Navajos. I believe it's, I can't remember the band, but they're at Tahajili. And Leon
Sacatero.
Uh-huh, S-A-C-A-T-E-R-O. He's a chief elder if you go to spiritualelders.org, there is there's a video that you can watch of him. When Grandfather Alejandro, I believe it was, came up from, he brought a pair of staffs up from Maya, and they were duplicated. They were left with Leon for a year and duplicated, and then were taken back down to Maya. But Grandfather Standing Bear works with a Sioux elder that works directly with Leon Sacatero.
Okay, now do you know anything about Zunis? We're going to be not far from their reservation.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. Abe Walking Bear.
Abe Walking Bear.
And I believe he's at turtletribe.org or turtletribe.com. Abe is a Zuni, but he was raised back east.
Uh-huh.
And I'll send you a link. There's a link to Turtle Tribe on my front page. It's just a small, about an inch and a half by inch and a half banner just above the media player on the front page of my website.
Okay,
TurtleTribe.org, I believe it is.
All right, and he's out of Zuniland area
now?
Yeah,
he's Zuni. I'm not exactly sure. He's either in northern New Mexico or southern Colorado.
Okay, I'm going to check him out.
We'll probably be interviewing Abe sometime.
Okay.
Talk to him on the phone one time, and but he was just through your area not too long ago. Manny Two Feathers is not well right now, but he's an elder up in New York that runs a mixed blood Sundance, and his books are endorsed by Dennis Banks and Russell Means.
What's his first name?
Manny, M-A-N-N-Y,
uh-huh.
Two Feathers, and he's at mannytwofeathers.com. Been in poor health lately, but his book, My Life is a Sundance.
I thought that was Leon Pelcher's book. I know Leon's book is
called probably got him. Yeah, you're right. I've got the titles confused, but Manny's book about Sundance is endorsed by Dennis Banks and Russell Means.
Okay.
And Manny's like a Southwest mixed blood Indian. He lives up in Erie, Pennsylvania. And Ed McGaugh, I've interviewed him a couple times. He's up in Minneapolis. He's Oglala Sioux. He's the author. He's authored three or four books, Mother Earth, Spirituality, and he did 104 missions over Vietnam.
Mm.
Now, all these names are in the archives. All you have to do is click on the names, and when you go to their shows, they have links directly to their websites. From the website.
Yeah, I listened to a number of your interviews on there. I listened to...
you can get their email addresses off their websites.
Yeah. But I listened to the couple that's riding around in the motorhome
mm-hmm.
week.
Stardubs.
Yeah, they're a trip.
Yeah, they are. That's really my first kind of new age interview. And I'm glad I did that, too. You know, I've kind of shied away from new age because of the rub, you know. But... you know, I'm hoping the rub is going to go away a little bit, you know.
You know, what kind of comforts us is when Bob Marley made his Kaya album, and it was much gentler and softer than his fiery other albums about justice and everything. This was more romance because he had fallen in love at the time.
Uh-huh.
And when he came out with it, people attacked it and said, you know, Bob, you're losing your... you know, determination to bring social justice to the world and all like that. And his comment was, my music is my music.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would, whenever I think about whether if I'm going to go a certain way, I'm going to hear certain, you know, you hear those voices in the background getting angry at you. I just think, and if they ever say they are, I just say, look, my vision is my vision. This is what I was...
That's right.
You know, and if it's not what you like, then
yeah,
that's your vision, and you go do your vision.
Yeah, I don't think Indians have got any room to judge New Agers in the way they're doing their dance. I just
yeah, yeah. And so you know, am I a New Ager? You know, of course. You know, are you absolutely? I mean, we're talking about the New Age. We're not talking traditional Native American. We're not talking traditional Christianity. We're talking about whatever. Has the ring of truth to it, which is, quote, New Age. New Age believes that you have to look at whatever might be true and decide for yourself whether it's true or not. So somehow the traditional people have gotten New Age to have the same stigma as liberal.
Right.
So they've successfully made it seem that anyone that claims to be liberal or New Age,
right, exactly,
must be someone with no moral content or a fool.
Right. Well, we just shy away from mass marketing anything. We just want to make enough money to stay on the air, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to continue. I know. We're now endorsing a product, and this is my pitch, called Diabetesine. It is and I believe Diabetesine has the potential of helping prophecy keepers become self-sufficient through pay-per-click marketing on Google. But this is a product that is based on Nobel Prize-winning research, and the Mayo Clinic has also warned that the one of the ingredients in it, which is bitter melon, will lower your blood sugar most effectively, that if you're not watching it, you know, it could lower it too much. So this is a good product. There's the type 2 diabetics have a 99% success rate with getting rid of diabetes, and it actually heals your red blood.
Well, I think I saw that on your site.
And 64% success rate with type 1. And my wife's been on it, and she was astounded. She usually, you know, she's been trying this and that, you know, for the last 10 years. I've never seen her respond very well to anything until she got on this stuff.
Now, my cousin's coming to visit us this weekend. He's a diabetic. Should I tell him to go on your site to get it?
Yeah, I just tell him to go to getridofdiabetes.com, which is our website. And I'm hoping this next, if we can get about $300 together, more than what we needed to keep the show running, which is about $350 or $400, we'll be able to buy some pay-per-click advertising on Google. And then if what I think is true, based on what we've done just on our own website traffic, which is make Betty's habit self-sufficient, we ought to be able to stop asking people for donations and just let Diabetes and, fund the show and fund some other things that have gone without doing, like, you know, the elders always wanted all the prophecies translated into as many languages as possible and sent out the world somehow. That's the real mission which of Prophecy Keepers, which really hasn't even really been, we haven't scratched the surface on yet. So anyway,
he's coming over Sunday. I'll tell him to go and
Get rid of diabetes.com.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's been great. Tomorrow morning we're going to go to the post office. I'm going to send you all of our books.
Great. And your show should be up by about 1 or 2 a.m. your time.
Oh, tonight?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I had no idea.
I'm going to get busy as soon as we're done. I go through and break it up into 18-minute sections, and that way, as people come onto the website, you might have one person on clip 1, one person on clip 4, one person on clip 6, and that way there's enough bandwidth that everybody's not sucking down the same file, and it makes it easier for people. It's the same thing Coast to Coast does. They break it up in 17 to 18-minute sections, and it makes it easy for people to listen.
You could use my Native American name, which is Sitting and Talking Bull.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I first started studying with traditionals out in Utah, I started learning about the Great Law, and the name the clan mother gave me was Speaking Wind. Talking Wind. It was Talking Wind, not Speaking Wind. It was Talking Wind. Speaking Wind was.
Well, that's better than Breaking Wind.
Well, that's what I told her. I said, as long as better than Breaking Wind, so. But, yeah, Speaking Wind was the elder that was Robert Ghostwell's friend that passed away in mysterious circumstances. That's an interesting story of everybody that was involved. Speaking Wind and his brother were mixed blood, I believe they were Zunis, that found an ancient book in the ruins of an old Spanish church, and which led them to some underground archives. Now, it's a fantastic story, but it's true. But everybody that was involved in that story is dead now, and there was five or six people other than Ghost Wolf. And he was slandered so badly, he's just about, you know, nobody will believe him or a word he says anymore.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Now, how did Leon Shenandoah die?
I believe it was just natural causes.
Okay. All right, so he just died of natural causes of old age.
Yeah, he was in his 80s.
Yeah.
From what I remember.
Yeah, boy, I wish he was on the plane. I'd love to go meet with
him.
Well,
you want to read a book called A Basic Call to Consciousness, and I believe it's online. You ought to be able to get it free. A Basic Call to Consciousness.
Who's that by?
I believe he wrote it, or had a big hand in writing it.
Because I've read his on Becoming a Human Being.
Yeah. Yeah, Basic Call to Consciousness, I believe, was written by him. I read it about 10 years ago, and I believe it's online.
And give me the name of that book about he walked with us before or something, you know, about Jesus walking with the Native Americans.
Well, that was He Walked the Americas.
Yeah, that's right.
And I've got that entire book up online. And
I can get it used on Amazon...
Yeah, you can get it directly.
I like to crawl in bed with the book or sit out in the hammock.
Oh yeah, you can get that directly from if you go to eBay, and you'll be able to get it directly from. Well, either way, you it's about $17 or $18 for a new copy. You'll get it out of Wisconsin, and that is the publisher. And there's another book that you want to get that was also written by Taylor Hanson. He bought the rights from Taylor Hanson before she passed away. But another book, and you can get this at used.addall.com, is a book called The Ancient Atlantic. And that's by L. Taylor Hanson. And that is one of the finest, it's a big coffee table book, it's one of the finest books you'll ever read. And it was also written by her. There's some unbelievable stuff in there.
The Ancient Atlantic?
The Ancient Atlantic. You can get a paperback. Sometimes you can get a paperback version for $10 or $15. Otherwise, you're going to pay $30 to $40 for an old... and they're usually in real good shape. They're hardbound. Sometimes you can even get them with the original dust jacket for about $30 to $40.
Yeah, because, you know, on Amazon now, you can buy everything used.
Yeah. You might... The Ancient Atlantic, I think you'll only find it at used.addall.com.
Used.addall.com?
Yeah, used.addall.com.
Okay. Good. Well, we'll send you a package tomorrow.
Great.
Next week.
Yeah, I want to speak about my favorite prophecy, that is
sure.
2012. And I feel like That's when it's going to be finalized, but I think each one of us, as we choose it now, it becomes the vibration that we all can share with each other, is that as we choose peace now, that reality becomes a reality now. And so we assist each other and share that message of living in peace and encouraging each other to say, yes, I live in peace.
Oh. Oh, and by the way, I highly recommend Jaime Perez's book, and there's a link to it online. It clarifies probably better than any of the books that are written by whites about the 2012 prophecy. 2012 is actually kind of the beginning of a 15-year period of cleansing, and he outlines the math in that. The Prophecy of Kwakatmok, very valuable book, and you can get it through Casa Jaguar, CasaJaguar.com, Casa Jaguar. Or just go to any of Jaime Perez's interviews, and he has his own radio show, and you ought to get in touch with him and get interviewed by Jaime down in El Paso.
Okay.
Wonderful man.
Right.
Wonderful. He's an elder. He's a Mixteca medicine man. And I believe he's got like a master's degree in public administration. This guy's a heavy hitter.
Oh.
Heavy
well,
hitter.
You sure are a fountain of information. My gosh, I feel like you walked into a time machine and just press a button. You want to know about this immediately.
Oh, well. This is my small circle. And it's not my circle. It's creative.
And I'm sure that you know, we'll have many more discussions, I can tell.
Yeah.
Oh, you betcha. You betcha. Well, Og, we appreciate you being on the show, and this has been another edition of Prophecy Keepers Radio, and we'll sign off now.
Okay.
Oh,
well, thanks a lot,
my brother.
Hey, bye-bye now. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
of other times, let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Let the truth be known.